Thank you. Thank you. Hey, everybody. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. And I really want to thank everybody, A, for coming out tonight on Father's Day and the U.S. Open night, and and putting up with me for 12 weeks. It's been, and I'd like to thank Dave for asking me. It's been such a great experience for me, and I really, really encourage you guys to do this, It's scary like anything we do in AA, but it's you grow, you grow. You make a lot of mistakes, but you grow through those mistakes. So thank you, everybody. And I've kind of screwed up time-wise. My whole thing is, my whole thesis is kind of working with others, and I'm on the chapter working with others, and I'm way behind schedule, but I think we can make it happen. Again, I always talk about trust God, clean house, and help others. As being really the foundation and the core of recovery, and it took me a long time to understand that. I did a 90 and 90, and I made coffee, and I sponsored guys through the best I could. Call me, do a 90 and 90, and I, until somebody really took me through the big book, and I got exposed to people who had a way better understanding than I did or I had seen, was I able to give it my best shot. And so to when someone asks you for help, or asks you to read the big book or whatever it is, it's such a privilege and such a gift, to get involved in that person's life. It's a privilege. It's heartbreaking. It's frustrating. It's rewarding. It runs a gamut of emotions. But it really, for you as a recovering person, it causes you to have to reflect and really look at yourself, and usually when you get mad, it's because you can see yourself in the other person. You can see, oh my God, he's acting like me, what an idiot. I know what he's going to get, and so you try to steer him if you can, and sometimes gently, sometimes not so gently. But so if you get anything out of this, go through the book. I'll tell you, read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and read Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, just to learn more. And for me, I told you that just brought my gratitude level for the first 100 people, and Dr. Bob especially, and Ann Smith, and of course Bill Wilson. I was so ignorant to what those people did for us. I was so ignorant, and I took everything so for granted. And I don't today. I probably still do, but I try not to. And I really try not to. And the harder I try not to, the better my life gets. So I think we're on page 92, halfway down. And if you had this book mailed to you in 1939 and you've gotten to this point, they're giving you really, really, really good directions on how to help someone else. And it's a little different than it is today. It's a lot about the family and things like that, and doctors. And but it's such great. I always deviate off track. But when I sit and I read this chapter with another guy, it always brings me back to, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. So instead of trying to spruce it up a little bit. So anyway, it says here, continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of the body and the mind which accompany it. And that was, when I heard about the mental obsession and the physical craving, and that made sense to me, that really changed things for me, because I didn't know what was wrong with me. So when that did change, then I knew there was something really wrong. I told you in the beginning, everyone else went home at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock. I could never go home, if I would keep going and find that. I made a lot of friends that way, and going down the scale. And I just thought, like I said, I thought being the egomaniac that I was, I just thought I was more fun than all my friends who went home. I didn't realize I was incapable of going home. So that's important information is, you know, the conditions of the mind and the body. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. And that is so true. I was at I was away all weekend out in Ohio at a big golf member guest tournament, which I've been going to for years. And I see actually my brother-in-law, he made a hole in one on a hole, so everybody gets a free drink. Mm-hmm. So I finally went to the bar to ask for my Diet Coke, and they said, "What's your name?" And I said, "I'm Dave Hall." And the both bartenders started laughing. I said, "What's so funny?" And he said, "You're the sixth person who said you're Dave Hall, but you must be Dave Hall because you're asking for..." Everyone was trying to... They knew I didn't drink, so they were trying to get my free drink. You know, they were trying to get a second drink for free, you know. But it's so funny out there to see. I there's one guy, it's free beer everywhere, all day, for all weekend, free beer. And there's this one guy, and we're at a country club. At the end of the day, he gets in a cart and he goes all over the golf course with, like, I don't know, I guess a big bag, and he empties out all the empty beers from the cooler and puts them in and takes them home with him. You know, he empties the coolers of beer. If you belong to a country club, you think you could afford the beer. But anyway. So it says here, doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it'll serve some good purpose. I have a little problem with doctors. I don't think most doctors can really understand what our problem is. So I don't think... you're going to get good information from them. But anyway, maybe back then they did. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. And back then, you know, it was revolutionary. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, the traits of an alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him he's an alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. And for you guys counting days, you know, it's awesome. It's a big deal. I always like to point out, I think Abby Thatcher had about 60 days, or actually I've heard 2 months, it says in the book, and in that Bill Wilson thing it says 6 months, but I'm not sure what it was. But... you know, when he carried the message to Bill. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. And this is the hardest, you know, usually this is a difficult thing, is to get someone to find their God. And when somebody does find God, it's so great. You know, it's been the greatest thing in my life. I've had a couple guys who I could see found God, you know, and it was the most important thing in their life. And that really is all we're trying to do here, right? We're trying to find God. You know, we're trying to find God and live the way God wants us to live. You know, if you've found God, you've got, like I always say, you've got to behave like someone who has God in their life. And that's hard to do, you know. It gets easier and never is perfect, unfortunately. But, you know better. You know, when you've had a spiritual awakening, you know better. And if you know better, it's hard to do unbetter, you know, or not do what you're supposed to do. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. And that's, I always try to get guys to kind of work on an elevator version of what recovery is and what the relationship with God is, so you can communicate it the best you can instead of going, there's no use in arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues no matter what your own convictions are. Your prospect may belong... skip that. Down here it says, but he will be curious. So a lot of times, I told you I was Presbyterian, which I love it, don't get me wrong, but there wasn't a whole... I didn't pay enough attention, let's put it that way. And so there's people who know a lot more about religion than me. But it says here, but he will be curious to learn why his own convictions have not worked and why yours seem to work so well. He may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. And I love this sentence. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice, unselfish, constructive action. I saw Maddie walk in. We talk about that a lot wherever Maddie is. We have to, and David taught me, we have to put other people's needs before our wants, and that's not always easy to do, but like anything we do, once we've done it, we feel a lot better. If we don't do it, we feel like jerks. Let him see that you are not there to instruct him in religion. I admit he probably knows more, blah, blah, blah. Perhaps your story will help him see where he has failed to practice the very precepts he knows so well. We represent no particular faith or denomination. We are dealing with general principles common to most denominations. Now here's great instructions here. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. Really a four-step, a ninth-step, and a 12-step, I guess. My big thing, the thing I always fall short on, and I wish I didn't, and that's really why I'm here, is I love taking guys through the steps, and when we start, all I ask is that when we're done, make yourself available at meetings and welcome the newcomer and put yourself in a position to be of use to the newcomers. And I hate to say that, I don't know if there's tricks to it that's a terrible thing to say, but I always sit in the back row and you can meet newcomers there. Sometimes if you can share, I do. That's where you meet them, right? They say the winners sit in the front. I sit in the back because that's where the people who are still shaking like I was are. One thing I did is, the thing was big is, Nick and I read the big book one time at this 12:15 meeting just because we wanted to read the big book and didn't know. So we met at the 12:15 meeting, and I would argue that people saw us reading the big book, and all of a sudden, like, six other people said, "Will you read the big book?" And just started with that, which was just dumb luck. But not that I'm a great reader of the big book, but they don't see anybody else reading the big book, really. And I say this just because it's the greatest gift you can get in this program to share someone else's recovery and try to, help them along. Mm-hmm. It says it is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. And you do. You grow so much and learn so much about yourself, usually by, it's trial and error or success and failure, but it's, mostly, failure or it's a learning process. Actually, he may be helping, we always use this one, right? He may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain. I thought that was a rehab thing. Make it plain. I didn't realize that was actually in the book, that stupid saying. Make it plain that he's under no obligation to you, that you only hope he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties and gets through the 12 steps. suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. And that's not a punishment. That is where the miracle happens. When you start putting other people's welfare before yours, you change. You change. You change. When you start, you get less selfish. And that's big for us, you know. It was big for me anyway. It's very big. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off. And Sandy and I, first thing I say when someone asks me, yeah, I'm happy to do it. This is what we're going to do, blah, blah. And if at any time you find someone else, by all means, it's all about you. You always fire me. Don't worry about firing me. We'll always be friends. And I wish my sponsor had said that to me, but I'm glad he didn't. I didn't have that opening. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, that's a beautiful line there, you've definitely made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. And that, that's whenever I meet someone, we sit and we talk and they tell me their story the first time for an hour or 2 hours, whatever it takes. And that's so I have a better understanding of how, as we read the big book, to apply it to what I know about him. I don't know why I brought that up. Anyway, your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all the program. And he may rebel against the thought of a drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion. That's great if you want them to tell you, I don't want to do this. None of us, right? You don't tell your sponsor that. You just say, oh yeah, I'll go home and write inventory right now. I'm on my way, you know. And then you don't hear from them for 2 weeks, you know. You'd rather have them say, I don't want to do this, or I'm afraid to do this, or, you know, or amends. You know, our dear friend Michael, you know, when he, I sponsored, he was sponsored by a friend of mine, George. And I said, well, how did your amends go with George? And he said, I didn't make any. I just went back to him and I made up stories about, I went to my dad and I said this to my dad, and he said this, and he said this, and I said this, and he said, yeah. Sure. But he was honest about it, you know. I mean, that's hard to tell the truth about that one. So you would prefer, please tell the truth, you know, tell the truth if you don't want to do it. Don't, because I was big on a lie by omission. I would just avoidance. He may rebel at the thought of house cleaning. Do not contradict such views. Tell him that this is like Dale Carnegie. Anybody ever do Dale Carnegie in here?
Yeah.
Feel, felt, found, right? Tell him that you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have ever made much progress had you not taken action. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, lend him a copy of this book. And this is something I'm starting to get back to, I hope. Unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation in any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once, and you may be tempted to let him do so. This sometimes is a mistake. I'm not sure. If he has trouble later, he may say you rushed him. I mean, if he has trouble later, he's going to say something anyway. You will be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform or lecturing, right? Never talk down to an alcoholic from a moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they work for you. Offer him friendship and fellowship. and tell him if he wants to get well, you will do anything. It's so funny. We will do anything to help. We were talking about before the meeting, because you want them to feel the freedom or whatever it is we feel. And it's so funny. We're dying for them and they're resisting. And as I did, I mean, I resisted like crazy. No one resisted more than me. If he is not interested in your solution, if he expects you to act as a banker, don't lend money and don't, most of this stuff. If he's sincerely interested and wants to see you again, this is what I want to start doing again. I've never done this, though. Ask him to read this book in the interval. And I think that's a good suggestion. I haven't done it, but I think that's a good suggestion. If your guy reads this book, if he reads this his first time, he means business. After doing that, he must decide for himself if he wants to go on. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. And this is a really important line. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. And I wish I had the magic formula for that, man. I'll tell you. I wish there was a magic phrase you could say. Maybe if we learned hypnotism, we could do it. But if he thinks he can do the job in some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his conscience. And I had that happen recently. I got a guy to his ninth step and he couldn't make a certain amend, and he was going to, I was going to get the text and read it. I forget, some method I'd never heard of. God bless. I checked on him recently too. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach which worked with us first 100 people. Wish they wrote that a lot. I wish that was better. When they pointed that out to me, it changed. It made me pay more attention. And somebody's got to point that out to you when it says we or us. It's the first 40 to 100 people as they wrote this book. But point out that we alcoholics have much in common, and that you would like, in any case, to be friendly and let it go at that. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. And we were talking about that before the meeting. Search out another alcoholic and try again. And that's one thing, is today that's a lot easier than it was when this book was written. Again, go sit in the back row and just try to, at least make the new people feel welcome. And when they're ready, they'll ask you for help. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you have to offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced he cannot recover by himself. And the best line I was told several times is, when you're ready, I'm here when you're ready. I will do anything when you're ready, And that's a painful thing to hear. It's polite, but it's painful when you know you're not giving it your best. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny another alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy, or free, or at peace. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. I wonder who that was. Barefoot Bill would know. Suppose now you are making a second visit to the man. He has read this volume and he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. So, you have to have gone through the steps, and obviously if you've given him the book to read and he's read it, I'm sure you have gone through the steps. Let him know, but the ones who tell you do a 90-90, that's a different story. That was my way I got you. Do a 90-90, then I'll think of something after 90 days. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story. Do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. But that's the best, is when you sit down and hear someone's story. It's usually really funny and fun, and they don't think so, but then they do after a while. He may be broken, homeless, blah, 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 creditors, blah, blah, discretion, okay. You know, we're not here to lend money. We're not here to, and, you know, most of the time, I'm going to say. It says, never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. So giving a guy a ride to a meeting, that's nice, but that's not enough. You have to act a good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean the loss of night's sleep, interference with your pleasures, which it does, interruptions to business. I leave work every day and read at lunchtime. It may mean sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to the police and courts, and I've done that, to sanitariums and hospitals, I've done that. Jails, yeah. Your telephone may jangle at night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. My wife says a lot of things, but she doesn't say that. She's in the program, so that's good. But she's got a lot of other stuff to say. A drunk may smash your furniture. Okay. Yeah, you may have to fight. Sometimes call it, okay. Send please. Okay. We seldom allow alcoholics to live in our homes for a long time. It's not good for him. It creates problems for the family. Though an alcoholic does not respond, there is no reason why you should neglect the family. That's the thing that we're really... that it's just not so much family-oriented anymore. And I really think about that a lot, because the recovery rate, there's a lot of reasons I think the recovery rate is so much lower. And I guess the involvement, I mean, obviously there's Al-Anon now, which is so great, and I wish I was better at that, or more, I was trying to get Peg to explain it, you know, to... Although she goes to AA, that's what's scaring me. I want to go to Al-Anon. She wants to go to AA. But yeah, it was a lot more family involvement back then. So anyway, it says, for the type of alcoholic who is able and willing to get well, little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed or wanted. And that's true. There's great, great, great stories of guys overcoming incredible stuff to get sober, and then there's a lot of stories of us not overcoming little things to get sober. So the men who cry for money, shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track, yet we do go to great extremes to provide each other with these things when such actions are warranted. This may seem inconsistent, but we think not. It is not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our service plane, our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon this, our assistance rather than God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are met. I didn't say that out loud, but I felt inside I need to get this, this, and this before I can really be the sober guy I want to be. And I know I was how stupid I was. I try to make sure if I can spot it in guys I get to talk to. Some of us have taken very hard knocks. This is it. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence on other people ahead of our dependence on God. And I mean, that's when we're getting. I know once we're through the steps, we have to have God, because in the end, it's only us and God. And when you have God, everything else kind of falls in place for the most part. Burn the idea into the conscience of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts God and clean house. All right, so now there's domestic problems. I think we're going to... domestic problem, maybe divorce, separation, reparation of the family. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Okay, it says here, okay, here's an important one. The argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. And I have to remind my wife that all the time. But, you know, I call it scorekeeping, right? We like to scorekeep, you know. A lot of scorekeeping goes on. I was talking to a woman at the 12:15, and her husband's they're both new. And she's going on and on about him, man. And that sounded way too familiar. It was like Vietnam flashbacks. And I just said, don't be a scorekeeper. After they have seen tangible results, the family will perhaps want to go along. These things will come to pass naturally and in good time, provided, however, the alcoholic continues to demonstrate that he can be sober, considerate, and helpful, regardless of what anyone says or does. And, you know, this is a lousy example, but just do a lot of dishes. You know, just do the dishes a lot, vacuum a lot, show that you care. You know, do things to show that you probably used to think were beneath you or were not your responsibility. You know, that's what I try to do, is I try to show appreciation. And we met in AA. It wasn't even like, but I'm not a perfect guy, so I need to do that stuff. Of course, we all fall much below the standard many times. But we must try to repair the damage immediately, lest we pay the penalty by a spree. If there's divorce and separation, wife has to understand this way of life. I'm going to skip that part. Okay, I like this. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent on people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. And that's a hard thing to sell when a guy's lost his family. But you have to try. And it's 100% true. But that is a tough conversation. We have seen men get well whose families have not returned at all. And we've seen others who drank when the family came back too soon. And usually we drink when anything comes back too soon, unfortunately. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. And that is a never-ending journey. For you, your prospect, but always for us, right? If you persist, remarkable things will happen. Oh, yeah, this is a good part. Remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. So I think I've said this. And I'm getting ready to do it. I forget who's going to do it. Is what I do is, if I'm working with someone else, I'll have them write down, what do you want from your recovery? What do you want? In a perfect world, what do you want from getting sober and recovery in AA? And guys will write down, and they seal it in an envelope. I did it with three guys that it worked, that got to the 5 years. And I put it in my safety deposit box, and then when we get to 5 years, before they celebrate, we open it together, they read it, and two out of the three of them started crying, you know, because what we write down today versus if we do this, what we have 5 years from now is just, you can't, you know, I think it's, you know, God, you know, and God's hands are better than anything we could plan. I mean, God is just so much bigger than us. It's, you can't even, there's not, they haven't come up with the words yet to describe it. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances is. And that is one of the stories, that rich guy who says, I would not trade what I have now for my, whatever he said. When working with, you know what I'm talking about. When working with a man and his family, you should take care not to, I'm going to skip that part. I got enough quarrels of my own. I don't need anybody else's. If you have been successful in solving your own domestic problems, tell the newcomer's family how this was accomplished. And I did that once, and I don't think I'll... my wife asked me, she made a new friend in AA 20 years ago, or close to 20, or 15 years ago. And she said, these people are having problems. We had problems for 10 years, you know. And I was telling Denise, I went and started going to the 7:30, 15 meeting BYOC group, just because it was every day, 7 days a week. I get there, I went every day. And it changed me. It helped. It changed me, and I got back on a fairly good track. And so these people wanted to know how I did it. So I go to their house for dinner. I never met these people, and we go to their house and for dinner, and I don't know them, you know. I kind of know who they are in AA. They're both in AA. And so and their kids have got these two daughters. They're screaming and crying the whole time. I'm like, what the fuck is this, you know? And my son comes over, and he was into Indians at the time, and he goes, Dad, if those two were Indians, their Indian's name would be Cries and Cries More. But so I lay my heart on the table. I tell me I was so lost and so misguided, and I was, you know, so off the track, and I was putting everything before AA, and I blew up our life and my wife. I'm so glad she stayed, and blah blah blah. And I lay it out. When I'm done, the guy just looks across the table and goes, "Well, I'm not as bad as Dave." And I was like, "Motherfucker!" Between this and this, get me out of here. But we're still friends with him, and we're probably gonna have dinner again soon to have to go over it again. But you can tell him how you did it, you know. And this way, you can see. Assuming we are spiritually fit, right? Assuming that we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People say we can go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We shun friends, blah, blah, blah. Avoid moving pictures. Okay. Our experience shows this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. And again, we, the first 100 people, and that's really, the one thing I'll always say, though, is, and I'm sober 26 years, and I'm spiritually fit, but I'm spiritually fit till I'm not spiritually fit, and I don't know when that day's coming, you know. So I don't go out, like, I was around alcohol all weekend, and it didn't really bother me. They had a great coffee machine at this place, a really good coffee, and it was funny to watch. And my wife asked me on the way home, she's like, you know, and they were all very rich people too. She goes, doesn't it bother you how much money is? No, it doesn't. She goes, you're lucky. She's like, it bothered me. I said, no, I mean, I just saw all sorts of funny things, and I'm grateful for what we have. It says an alcoholic who cannot meet them all still has an alcoholic mind. There's something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism, which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation, is doomed to failure. If the alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a time, but he usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these methods. These attempts to do the impossible have always failed. You know, I don't know what to say here. I don't have any interest in, maybe because I'm older. I guess if you're younger, it's harder. But I go to work, I go to an AA meeting, and I play golf, and I don't do much else than that. I mean, When I was younger, I think I shared. You know, a big thing for me was I realized if I'm not drinking at certain places, you know, I was on a golf trip, and it was always a thing to go to the go-go bar afterwards. And I'd order a pitcher of kamikazes and drink half of it and be passed out under the table till they dragged me out. But when I was a designated driver, after 15 minutes, I was bored out of my mind. And so I said, this van's leaving in 10 minutes. Whatever you're getting done, get done. That was an eye opener for me. You know, for me, I mean, if I wasn't having fun there, obviously it was all about the alcohol. And so, you know, I didn't realize it was just made me look at life a little differently. So it says here, if we have a legitimate reason for being there. The one thing, and it may come up here soon, I'm not sure where in the book it is. It says here, if we're spiritually fit, we can go anywhere, you know. And you'll get people who will say that in a meeting. I think I've said this. I'm sorry if I've said it, but in case I didn't. My book tells me, I love when they start with that. My book tells me, if I'm spiritually fit, I can go anywhere. And that is true. But don't say that in a meeting. Don't say, what are you trying to prove how sober you are? I heard that in a meeting in this room. And I left this room, I went to the Jolly Trolley. You know, I'm spiritually fit, I'm going to the Jolly Trolley, you know. And that was one of my 90-day pins, you know. I mean, it's true, but I just don't think we have to say it in a meeting. To a person who has had experience with an alcoholic, this may seem like tempting providence, but it isn't. You will note that we made an important qualification. Therefore, we ask on each occasion, have I any good social, business, or personal reason for going to this place? And it says on, to thine own self be true. You know, we have to be honest with ourselves. Or am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from that atmosphere or such places? If you can answer these questions satisfactorily, you need have no apprehension. Go or stay. And again, you know, you're getting this book, you're reading this book by yourself. You know, you're reading this book when it came out by yourself. Whichever seems best. But be sure you're on solid spiritual ground before you start, and that your motive in going is thoroughly good. You know, I'm sure this is 100% right. I know that I rationalize a lot. So I was incapable, you know. Today I'm okay with it. I fear for newcomers, you know, because I, from what happened to me. So I don't mean to act like this isn't true. It is, but be careful. Do not think what you'll get out of the occasion. Think what you can bring to that. I think that applies more to meetings than to going wherever, you know. When you go to a meeting, it's what you're bringing to the meeting. When I get people, I didn't like that meeting. I didn't get anything out of it. You know, try to bring something to the meeting. But if you are shaky, you had better work with another alcoholic instead. How about that? Why sit with a long face in places where there's drinking? Sign about the good old days. If it is a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If it's a business occasion, go attend to your business enthusiastically. If you are the person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means go along. Let your friends know they're not to change their habits on your account. So these are all great instructions. Once you have gone through the 12 steps, how you can interact with the regular people in life. At a proper time and place, explain to your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. And that's something I think we all need to be ready to quickly explain. I don't have a problem now, but actually our caddy over the weekend, he's like, let's get the beers rolling, you know. And I'm like, I'm good, you know. And I guess my brother-in-law told him, because after about 13 beers later in the day, you don't drink, man, you don't drink. And he was, I'm not sure he's going to be employed there much longer. But anyway. at a proper time and place, explain why it just, yeah, I mean, I explained to him, and his big thing was weed, you know. He's like, yeah, man, I'm going to have two joints tonight to play video games, you know. I was like, he asked me, why'd you stop drinking? I said, I'm a freaking drug addict and alcoholic. I've been clean 20 years. I said, weed was the hardest thing to quit, right? Because you don't spend $500 a night in weed like you did cocaine, and you don't black out smoking weed, although I think it's a lot stronger now, but smoking marijuana I couldn't see it, but it robbed me of everything. It robs you of everything, and you can't see it. And I tried to, maybe I planted a seed. I don't think so. Let your friend change it. Okay, if you people ask why. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you're getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drank liquor. Your job now is to be at a place where you can be of maximum helpfulness to others. Never hesitate to go anywhere you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid place, spot on earth, on such an errand. And I've been on 12-step calls. They weren't sordid spots, but they were sordid people. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. And that is, God will always take care of you if you're doing God's work. Many of us keep liquor in our homes. We often needed to carry green recruits through severe hangovers. Some of us still serve it to our friends, provided they're not alcoholic. But some of us think we should not serve liquor to anyone. We never argue this question. I think that was kind of the Washingtonians' downfall, as they felt not only should we not drink, but no one should drink. We feel that each family, in the light of their own circumstances, ought to decide for themselves. The one thing I got to say is you hear people, a lot of times I'll hear women in meetings, and actually this was my wife's, I got to give her credit for this. You'll hear women who are trying to stop drinking and their husbands are still drinking at home, you know, and their husbands have all sorts of, you know, why it's okay to keep it in the house. And my wife said, she goes, I wonder if their kids had a deadly allergy to peanut butter, if they'd find it necessary to keep peanut butter in the house, you know. She put it a better way, but anyway. We're careful never to show intolerance or hatred of drinking as an institution. Experience shows that such an attitude is not helpful to anyone. And I told you guys my experience with my brother-in-law, and that's where I came from before I came here. They're having Father's Day over there. And I'd be at these family functions, and I'd always be passive-aggressive to my brother-in-law and my sister because he would drink, and they were having problems, and my parents were always propping him up, and it was driving me crazy. So I was always sarcastic and passive-aggressive at family functions. And one time leaving, my wife said, why would he ever come to AA if you're the face of AA and you're an asshole? You know? And she was right. She was 100% right, you know. I became less of an asshole, and he's now in AA. And I'm still trying, but... every new alcoholic looks for this spirit among us and is immensely relieved when he finds that we're not assholes. A spirit of intolerance might repel alcoholics whose lives could have been saved had it not been for such stupidity. That kind of hits home. We would not even do the cause of temperate drinking any good, for not one drinker in 1,000 likes to be told anything about alcohol by one who hates it. I love alcohol. I love everything. But anyway, just an asshole. Someday we hope that Alcoholics Anonymous will help the public to a better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem. But we shall be of little use if our attitude is one of bitterness, hostility, drinkers will not stand for it. And this is great. Great way to end. After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. And besides, we have to stop fighting anybody or anything. We have to. And that is so true. When you can cease fighting everything and everyone, let's change it. If you're fighting anyone, you're not at peace. And if you're not at peace, you're in trouble. So, and like I like to say, this is about 10% of it's about our drinking, and the other 90% is about our behavior and our fears and all our character defects. And this is the greatest. I think this is the greatest gift God ever gave to the human race. Certainly for us and for our families, but it is such a wonderful way of living. And again, I ask you guys to, I guess I'll just say, trust God, clean house, and most importantly, help others. Thank you.